The thing we have to know about Joan of Arc is that we have more about her than about almost any individual of her period. She was the celebrity of her time, and a lot was written at the time. And once you start to examine exactly what she did, I think the evidence is overwhelming that she was a trained knight. But there are a lot of historians that would disagree with that. So it is my theory. It's not an accepted historical fact.
Now, many of us first encountered as children the remarkable short life of Joan of Arc, the 14th century armour-clad Frenchwoman fighting English occupation. Reading as an adult about her prowess in battle and her political skill makes her even more fascinating, especially as much of it was carefully documented from battlefield to her trial and execution. Manda Scott's new novel, Into the Fire, explores with a real sense of period and adventure the theory that Joan of Arc could not have been an illiterate peasant girl, but the illegitimate daughter of Charles VI, raised as a warrior with a mission to save France under a secret identity. And she parallels that story with one of a modern mayoral election in the city of Orléans, where all sides, including the far right, are battling for ownership of St. Joan and what she represents about French identity. Manda Scott had previously written an acclaimed series of novels about Britain's warrior Queen Boudicca, so was Joan of Arc the obvious next choice?
Yes, obviously. When I'd done Boudicca, Joan of Arc is the next in the line of great women warriors. But all I'd been told about her was that she was a standard bearer, that she went into battle and did nothing at all. And I wasn't interested in writing about a cipher. Once I discovered that that wasn't what she'd been, then she became endlessly fascinating.
This theory that she was a trained knight, which you explore, what's the evidence for that and how did you come across the idea?
I read an article in The Independent back in 2003. A Ukrainian orthopaedic surgeon who specialised in building faces on skulls had been invited to France. He ended up looking at the contents of the tomb of the son of the man that Joan put on the throne. There were seven bodies in the tomb. So there was the king, his wife, and then five others, of whom four were knights who were identifiable. And he said that the last one was a woman who had died in her late 50s or early 60s, and looking at her bone structure, he said this woman had trained to ride a warhorse in full armour from a really early age. And he said this was Joan of Arc. And they closed the tomb and they threw him out of France. So straight away I had my contemporary thriller. There are people in France who will do a lot to keep this quiet, and it isn't much of a fictional leap to killing to keep it quiet. And I had, this woman was a warrior. This woman trained from a really early age, which she must have been to be a knight. And then I could write about that. The thing we have to know about Joan of Arc is that we have more about her than about almost any individual of her period. She was the celebrity of her time, and a lot was written at the time. And once you start to examine exactly what she did, I think the evidence is overwhelming that she was a trained knight. But there are a lot of historians that would disagree with that. So it is my theory. It's not an accepted historical fact.
Well, we've got a section in the novel describing her in battle. And I have to say, these parts of the book are the most amazingly evocative of this
woman who
fights with such strength and taunts the English. Yeah. Would you like to read us there?
I absolutely will. Thomas is a horse's length behind the maid when she singles out her target, a flashy rider on a flashy bay sporting a blue velvet cloak and swan feathers in his hat. This is Franquette d'Arras, the bandit captain whom the king has ostensibly come here to hunt. But the king is not hunting him, and the maid has seen him, and he is caught between the stream and the hedge with nowhere to run. In the last three strides, he brings his shield to the fore. She aims her lance for the centre. The maid's lance is built for war. It does not shatter. Rather, her enemy soars back over the near side quarters of his horse.
You parallel the story of Joan in her lifetime with this modern kind of conspiracy. It's an election for a new mayor in Orléans, and they're battling over who she is. Why do you think, which your book very much hints at, that the French need to keep her as a peasant and wouldn't like the idea that she might be an illegitimate daughter of, you know, a great king?
Because France would have become divided. The king that she put on the throne was acknowledged to be a bastard. He was illegitimate. His mother said so. His real father was the actual king's brother. Here we have the acknowledged daughter of the king who can fight. Charles VII was not a fighter. So you've got a woman who has won in war. The man who married her could have made himself king. And then not only would the English have been contending the French throne, but two sets of French nobles would have been contending the French throne. And I think that right from the beginning, when Yolanda of Aragon brought her to Chinon, the deal was, you are not going to say who you are ever. And she went to great lengths during her trial to obfuscate any possibility of anybody looking closer into who she might have been.
And you really believe this theory?
I absolutely do. It's the only thing that fits, and it fits in so many different ways that I think it's not possible that she was anything else. It took 20 years to train boys how to fight. She did not learn in 11 days. She knew how to ride. She was Olympic-level dressage horsewoman. She had been trained for a long time. She referred to the Duc d'Orléans, the second most powerful man in the land. She told him she would have his head struck from his shoulders if he didn't do what she told him to do. I truly don't believe a peasant, however God-struck, would ever say that. And she wasn't God-struck. She didn't mention saints or angels at all until she was under questioning, many, many days of questioning by the English. And right at the end, when she was captured because she was functioning as a true knight. She would not go back into Compiègne until her men were in safety. She knew all of this. She had been trained by somebody who not only knew the rules of the tournament, but really cared about them. And Charles VI was that man.
You know what's fascinating reading this book is that she is like the superhero that we see her as, isn't she?
Yes.
The way she performs
yes.
in battle. But you never attempt to get inside her head. This character, Thomas, who's initially loyal to the English and he's their agent and then completely falls for her power and her authority, is the way that we see her. And I thought that was very interesting. You didn't attempt to get inside her mind or indeed the minds of other women at that time. You look at her from outside and try and fathom who she is.
I have 80,000 words written from inside her head. And that was my original look at it. It didn't work in the context of a dual timeline novel because this is a thriller and it has to have the narrative cadences of a thriller. It needed both sides to be asking a question, and the question had to be, who was this person? And you can't have that question if you're looking at it from her inside.
Your decision to have a parallel plot, when you could have written the novel just about her, and you could have written a separate novel just about a modern police detective and an investigation into the mystery of the tomb. You put the two together for a reason, and you tie it up with the idea of Marine Le Pen and the whole battle to own Joan of Arc in modern French
yes.
politics. Why did you do that?
Because I think it's fascinating. I didn't want to write two separate books. I don't think there's really room for that. I didn't want to have to choose between the two. Do I write a historical? Do I write a modern thriller? And I thought that there would be a way of weaving the two together in a way that would hold people between each thread. And because the modern day, that concept, the right in France has hijacked her. They've taken this woman, they've made her the icon of perfect womanhood, the virginal, godly, peace-loving Republican. She wasn't any of those things. By the time I'd done the research, it mattered really to my own integrity that we understand who she really was, not the woman who has been hijacked. And you could only really see the importance of that in the current day if you have the contemporary narrative to go with it.
What's your view about how this book might be received there?
I have to say, the challenge of selling it to publish in France has been considerable. They're not happy about the idea that their patron saint might not be all that she was portrayed to be. I am hashtag radical truth. That's what I think we've got. And people don't always like it.
Joan of Arc is that story we all read as kids in the Lady Bird book where we
yes,
felt
yes.
ashamed to be English.
Yes.
And we knew that she was the right side and we were the wrong side. And as a Scot as well, reading this after the referendum
yes.
and seeing all this historical tensions about the relationship between Scotland and England and its relationship with France, it's got
yes.
new resonances, doesn't it?
It really does, yes. And when I went to Orléans, there is this plaque on the wall that is the names of the Scots who fought for Orléans, and it's still there. And so trying to find the balance between Scottishness, Englishness and Frenchness when actually I think those boundaries should be falling and we should be looking at ourselves as Europeans and citizens of the world was another very interesting circle to look at.
Manda Scott on the 15th century warrior, Joan of Arc, and Into the Fire is published today.